Welcome to Slip Angle. It's another show on the new board, and this time I am talking to Mr. James Houghton, direct from Kitchener, Canada. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how are you doing, Abe?
Not too bad. How are you?
We're trapped. We're trapped in the north, and it makes me sad.
I think it's safer up there. So the United States had its peak number of cases or its highest number of cases yesterday since all of this happened. So it's not getting better down here.
Yeah, and we keep on going the lowest we've had kind of for the last few months every day. So we're down around, I think we're down sub 300 new cases per day right now.
That's fantastic.
Hopefully, I don't pretend to know what the answer to anything is. You know, I'm just kind of, we're just up here being as safe as we can, wear a mask. If a mask doesn't help, whatever. If it does, great. You know, there's lots of people arguing on Facebook about all this stuff, so the penalty to wearing a mask is not very high, so I'll just keep wearing
I read an analogy I saw on Facebook that kind of resonated with me. It was, if a person on the street walks up to you and they're not wearing pants and they decide to take a leak, it might get all over you. If you're not wearing pants, it's definitely going to get all over you. But if you're both wearing pants, it'll just get on them. And that sticks to me.
Yeah. So we'll just keep doing our thing. I mean, still been going to a few events and stuff like that, but I park in the back 50 and, I just go up with, my parents and if Mitch and Mitch, Alberto and Todd come, they'd be just driving themselves because they have their own circle. So we just try to do everything that we can do and still have a bit of fun.
So how have you, you been? You've been going to a few events.
Yeah. So we've been going out doing some test events and some time attacks. So we've been to a couple of Northern Speed events and an Ontario Time Attack event, and the good old GLTC car does better than it probably should in Time Attack events because we're not limited to tires when we go to any of those events. So we've got some old 315 A7s from the front of the Integra that were laying around. Quite a few heat cycles on them, but man, that car is rowdy with the 315 A7 on the front.
So I don't remember the details. You made some adjustments, so you've got a separate spec from GLTC, right? You've got you were calling it GLTC X or something.
So we're working on GLTC X right now. We've got a motor at the machine shop, and we've got a piece of Lexan to make our rear spoiler a little bit higher, and we're going to be doing an actual splitter with a splitter blade and some professional Auspice users in it.
Keep it simple.
But we're going to try to make it so it's really easy to go back and forth between the two. Just because the stuff that we're running in up here doesn't really have any rules anyway, so why not go a little bit faster if it's not going to take much money or work?
Sure, yeah.
So we're pretty excited about that. And then the tires, of course. So the tires we've been running, the big old Hoosiers from the Integra, so that's been fun. But that is so far the only change. But for this weekend, we're going to have the tires and the rear spoiler. And then for next weekend, we should have the tires and the rear spoiler and the splitter with the diffusers. And then hopefully for the event after that, we'll have the rotor in there too as well.
That'll be great. So this podcast is going to be, I don't know how long it's going to be, but I think you have some ideas. So the story for this show is going to be what James and Abe think is the best car for each grid life class, because you have some ideas.
I have some ideas, and I think that my ideas can quite easily differ from other people's ideas. And your opinion always speed is there's a Corvette for every class. I'll argue that there's a Corvette for every class that doesn't have a tire width.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting point, because maybe we should start with unlimited because that's the most familiar. But I at the moment, I think that you and Will are good examples of working around kind of, I don't want to say a design flaw, but you're exceeding the mechanical capability of the packaging and equipment within the car, right? So you have engines that are robust, but they're robust because they've been sleeved and you've got built engines, and it's like cumbersome to build that. And then you have transmissions that can't deal with that power level. Hello?
Sorry, I just lost you there for about 10 seconds, Abe.
Oh, shoot.
Sorry. That was on my end, though, not on yours.
Well, but you've got, like, you and Will have mechanical capability that exceeds what the initial design was, probably by, like, five times. And so you're working around problems where you have a gearbox that you have to figure out, and you have an engine that you have to figure out. My argument for an unlimited car that is like a turbo V8 as an example, it's easier because the equipment is heavier duty. Would you agree?
I can see that, and that aligns with what I would say would be the car that I would build. You know, when you're talking about what you'd build for unlimited time attack, to me, you can hardly even have a budget, because unlimited time attack gets so out of hand, you might as well talk about no real budget. And I'm not talking about, you know, a Lambo or you know, buying a Bugatti Veyron or something like that.
They wouldn't win.
But I would. What's that?
They wouldn't win.
No. I would build a C6 Corvette Z06, and I would figure out, I would talk to whoever engine builders that I'd have to talk to, because in our world, not a lot of people have made more than like 650 wheel naturally aspirated out of these big, like Ferris and Jeremy, out of these big 460 cubic inch motors. But there's drag racers, and you know, in NASCAR they make a lot. And I would figure out what we have to do to make an NA 1,000 horsepower Z06.
Yeah.
But then I love all wheel drive for an unlimited class car, especially with, you know, some of the tracks that we run. But because I'm not putting all the weight of a turbo system in, and because people like, you know, Sasha are figuring out this hybrid stuff so well right now, I would want one electric motor per front wheel in the front to make it all wheel drive.
Okay.
Because I figure you're going to save a ton of weight not having two turbos, two manifolds, intercooler, wastegates, all this kind of stuff. Your cooling system can be more simplified if it's an NA motor. So then I would put some of that weight back into it with a hybrid system for the front. And if you were, I don't know how it works enough. I don't know if you could add to that 1,000 horsepower kind of through the front wheels, or if you'd clutch it out once you're at a certain speed. But I would want to use it for, you know, traction coming out of a low speed corner. And I think that a C6 Z06 is just an amazing chassis for a race car. They're so light. I think that you could use a lot of the theories and the design behind the C6R, the race car. And I like that you can run a really tall tire on them. And I think that a tall tire is seriously underrated in time attack. And I think that very, very few cars run heights of tires like what they do in pro racing.
Sure.
And you know, that would be one thing that I would want to be running, like even taller than some of the Corvettes are running now, because I think in pro racing those GTLM Corvettes are running like a 710 height rear tire, which is like 28 inches tall. And to me, you know, you can only put so wide of a tire on within reason, but then you start going taller and you're making that contact path longer as well as wider.
Well, I've always thought it would be cool to start with one of the lightest chassis you could get, where like a Lotus Elise seems like a natural fit, but I think you run into the same problem that you do with the front wheel drive cars, which is packaging, right? You have a small engine compartment and a small area for a transmission, and like those things, if you're talking about making 1,000 horsepower, constrain you in what you can do. So maybe you can work around it, but I think it's probably a lot more work.
And I want more wheelbase than that if I'm going to try to go 114 or 112 at Road Atlanta.
So, you know, I'm in all of these like grid life related class chats, and something that came up in the Street Mod group, which is known as the ice cream delivery class, is just how fast like the pro racing IMSA cars are relative to the unlimited stuff. And they do it so easily. And I think, you know, you can't ignore how much that money gets used to make the cars both fast and reliable. And I don't know that there's any unlimited class budget that could try and get to that point.
And I'll counter that about their EV. Okay, so they do a ton of engineering before, you know, they have a ton of notes from previous events. They have a ton of engineering and engineers and, you know, data analysts. And they're such a big team. They are so close when they get to the track already with their setup. Their drivers are so close with their setup. And the one big thing that I think is absolutely huge is almost every one of those pro race teams have two cars and multiple drivers per car. So now you're dealing with data, driving data from so many drivers driving the same, basically the same car. And I think that if you started taking, you know, all the unlimited class guys and all the fastest track mod guys or whatever in grid life and started putting them in the same car, I think that it would be insane of what they'd start figuring out that can be done. And
sure.
Even just with the chassis setup, the driving, the whole aspect of it. So
yeah, but what unlimited car could even turn that many laps? I don't know of any.
None. So this is the thing. So if you gave myself, let's say, a GTLM Corvette with a base setup and, you know, and one set of tires for the weekend, and no engineer and no driver coach and no none of those people, I'd be interested to see how far off the pace it would be, because I bet you it would be quite significantly off the pace.
Sure.
So I think that, you know, people compare that. Actually, I was talking to Matt Drews about it a couple of days ago, but and I'm not trying to throw him under the bus or anything like that, but I just think that people see this, and Porsche have been racing 911s for what? 60 years now?
Forever, yeah.
55 years? There's probably been, I would guess that there's been over $1 trillion spent on racing Porsche 911s in 55 years.
Total. Yeah, probably.
So they never forget any of that data. Like, stuff that we're learning in the TSX right now is translatable to the Integra. Stuff that we learned in the Integra 10 years ago is translatable to the TSX. Like, everything is knowledge. So when you have, you know, and same with Corvettes, right? 60 years of Corvette racing. When you have a 60-year data pool, that is special, and that never goes away. And I think that's why, you know, some of the people that keep on sticking around in Time Attack just keep on getting better and better and better, because they don't forget all those things they've learned. You know, oftentimes you're not going to keep on having the same problem. In Time Attack, we seem to have just a possible, but
okay, so you're saying, you know, you don't lose the knowledge you gain even though the chassis evolves, right? It's we've got 60 years worth of Porsche engineering and development that has led to, you know, what the current IMSA, you know, cars are.
Exactly. And I look at that kind of translating into some of the people that have been around Time Attack for longer. And I think Andy and those guys used to break cranks on the Evo. Then they found a crank that doesn't break anymore. Well, that's kind of checked off, right?
Right.
You know, there was a bunch of stuff that we were struggling with in the Integra. I can't even think of one of them off the bit, you know. But you keep on figuring these things out and you move on. You know, we used to struggle with, example, for rub strips. We were burning up rub strips all the time until we, Stimtech built these giant, big, thick titanium rub strips, and now we've used them for the whole season last year on the front wing of the Integra, and they're probably good to go for another season still. And it's like, it's just nice to not have to be fiddling with that when you want to be analyzing that data or fixing other problems or just having a rest your mind and your soul in between sessions, right?
Right.
So I think that that knowledge is, you know, almost invaluable, and I think that that's one of the reasons why these cars just continue to get faster and faster, and just the sheer amount of people that are on that team. I just think about as our team has kind of expanded over the years, and, you know, more smart people have been helping us with the Integra and the TSX and everything now. You know, you get to the point where a new setup works better and better kind of first time out, to the point of the TSX, right? You know,
yeah, right.
One little problem the first weekend, but mostly the thing just worked and worked great.
So
that's always going to be the case.
We, I think we agree that in the unlimited level, a lightweight chassis like the C6 is probably best. I think that also applies to track mod, but what do you think?
I do. And I would let that trickle down to track mod and be, because again, track mod don't have tire rules. And I think that, you know, a Corvette in unlimited and in track mod can be very light with those rules. I think in street mod, it starts to struggle being as light as it needs to be for a 285 tire.
Yeah.
So in track mod, I would kind of agree, same type of thing. I think that the turbo setup on Ferris's car is fantastic.
Oh man, it's so fast.
I think that when you have V8s, though, I think that the, you know, the look at the option of being NA is a cool thing as well. You know, but obviously as a Garrett sponsored driver and stuff like that, I think that what you can do with a turbocharger is unbelievable, especially on smaller displacement motors. But when you have a car that came with a V8 from the factory, it would be interesting to explore, could you make 800-900 wheel horsepower?
Well, you're a fan of NASCAR. What do the current NASCARs make-ish?
They've turned those cars down a lot over the last years because they think that people like watching pack racing, and I hate pack racing. So they keep on turning them down every year. But about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago or something like that, they were 900 horsepower out of 358 cubic inches.
Okay, and they're running at 100% throttle for 3 or 4 hours, right?
Well, the really high horsepower ones don't usually run 100% throttle because they run, like if they were to run Daytona or Talladega, that would be a restrictor plate race, and they turn them down and turn the RPMs down too. But even still, a large percentage of their life is ran for hours and hours like that. So yeah, and back then, they were revving them 10,000 RPMs, and I think since then they've turned the RPMs down a little bit as well. But at their peak a few years ago, they were like 900 horsepower, 10,000 RPM, push rod motor, 358 cubic inches.
That's wild.
You think of like the, you know, Ferris's and Jeremy's car at 460 cubic inches with the right combination in there. What is possible?
Well, I mean, so to get that amount of power out of, you know, sub 400 cubic inch motor, I mean, you have to have extraordinary fuel and you have to have an incredibly high compression ratio, right? Like, what else is there?
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I don't know that the fuel is as crazy in NASCAR as you think. I'm not sure exactly, but I'm pretty sure that they don't run super, super, super exotic stuff. But you're probably right. It's probably super high compression.
And revs. You need a lot of revs.
Yeah, a lot of revs, a lot of compression, a lot of camshafts.
Huh.
But when you go down the next class, and the next class after that, that's in my opinion where things get a little crazy.
Yeah, I think after this call, I'm going to sit down and try and write a primer for Autobahn this weekend. You know, it kind of goes by year. There's one class that stands out that has better competition than the rest, and I believe that this is the year for street mod.
I agree 100%.
I think last year we saw just incredible competition in track mod, also in street, but incredible competition in track mod where there were 3 or 4 drivers that had a legitimate chance of winning any one event and winning the season overall. And this year in street mod, I would say that we have that in spades.
Yeah. It'll be really wild to see what that record goes down to this weekend, as long as you guys have dry weather.
I mean, I don't know how much you paid attention to what was going on at Gingerman a couple weekends ago, but when we were there in October, Dewey and Alex Moss went back and forth trading fastest times and records for, you know, street mod ever at Gingerman. And I think they finished at like a 134.0, which is faster than I ever expected anyone to go in street mod. And they come back in June at this event, which is the first event back at Gingerman for most people. And that time that they set in October wouldn't have been fast enough to put them on the podium.
It's so impressive. It's so wild.
And I think that everyone kind of expected to Jackie to have it in the bag, and to see both Moss and who else was it? Shoot.
Ronnie
was so fast.
I didn't know. I love Ronnie, and I knew he could drive, but I didn't know that he could drive like that. To bust that out of nowhere, I was so impressed.
Well, I think for years he's been fighting the car, and unlike years prior, he had committed a bunch of time to getting the car sorted and getting it right, and he rebuilt every system on the car, and it just works.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think that sometimes we don't get to see his driving because he's so great at supporting all of his people at the track all the time. You know, he brings a car to the track, Andy's car, the diff breaks, pull the diff out of my car, put it in yours, no problem. And I think that that's just fantastic, but I think that that's something that we haven't always got to see his true potential because of that.
Yeah, and I think at the moment he's in love with his car, and rightly so as he should be.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this weekend, drivers that I know are coming in street mod are Moss and Sean Krebsbach, who is insanely fast and is coming with a fresh build. It's a 2.2, and I think he's got a G25660. I think that's right.
That is correct. I just talked to him the other night.
And on Ronnie's dyno, he's making like 550 horsepower, which is a ton. It's like a ton. I think on a dyno jet, that's easily over 600.
Yeah, Ronnie's dyno is a big time heartbreaker. So when you're making that kind of power there, that thing is going to be rowdy.
So, and, you know, I have no doubt that Moss will continue to be fast. He's really come into his own with driving. And he was fast at Gingerman, but if you watch his in-car, he fights the car a lot during the lap, and I think there's more there.
Yeah, and I'm not doubting anything about that, but I think if that car was made a little tiny bit more neutral chassis setup, I think that it would be easier to drive fast right away. And as you said about the gearing, I think that, in my opinion, we kind of have a theory about the gearing and time attack and stuff like that. And these intermediate type tracks, like a Gingerman, you know, or a place kind of like that length, I believe that those tracks for the normal power band of a kind of a normal car, you know, four cylinder turbo type of thing, to me, that's a 3-gear track, a third, fourth, and fifth in a 6-speed, or a second, third, and fourth in a 5-speed.
Sure.
With gearing kind of optimized. And then I believe that a Road Atlanta or a Road America is a 4-gear track. So, you know, in a 6-speed, a third, fourth, fifth, sixth,
yep.
5-speed, second, third, fourth, fifth. And I think that the fact that he has to keep on using that second or that sixth gear
costs so much time.
I think that it'll be interesting to see kind of as they keep going with that car, how fast it's going to go and how fast all the cars are going to go. Because I think Jackie went super fast with, you know, one of his laps with no boost coming out of the last corner, and still went a really fast lap time.
So I have the benefit of having most of the drivers trust me enough to share their data with me without giving it to everybody else. Not that they aren't happy to share it, because most of them are. But if you look on the back straight, 10 to 11 between Jackie and Alex, they're both insanely fast, but Jackie's graph is speed versus distance trace is completely smooth, right? The gear changes are almost not noticeable. They don't cost time. And you can see all of the gear changes on Moss's speed versus distance trace. And especially that shift into sixth hurts.
Yeah. Now, I'm kind of a wild man, so I would do things different. And if it was at all within reason to just turn the RPMs up even more to avoid the sixth gear shift, I would. Now, he's shifting the sixth gear so early there, I'm not sure that that's an option. But I've always been the idea of, well, a couple hundred RPMs probably isn't going to hurt it right now anyways.
Well, and I think in his case especially, he's still running the a factory K24. So, like... he doesn't have a built valve train or anything. It's just running it. And I think at the moment for them, it's a development opportunity to figure out what you can do with an $800 eBay motor.
Yep. Yep. No, you're absolutely right.
So Street GT is a little, we didn't decide. What's your street mod car?
So as we've been talking about this, I'm not sure that my street mod class car is legal, and I might have to do a quick change of it. So you'll have to inform me of this, because I know you know all this stuff. Is a mixed manufacturer engine swap allowed in street mod?
Let me double check, because I mean, I've been working on rules for 4 years now, and every year we kind of revisit it. So it's difficult to remember was that a rule 2 years ago? Is it still a rule? Let's see. I think you can do a mixed manufacturer swap. Let's see, street.
Up to a certain number of cylinders, right?
I believe that's right. Chassis aero engine. Mixed manufacturer swaps are permitted, but only plus or minus two cylinders from OEM.
And a turbo is allowed, still.
It is.
So my car is legal then.
Okay. So it does say you cannot use an NA V8 swap in addition to aftermarket forced induction. So you couldn't put a Corvette motor into a street mod car and turbocharge it.
No problem. Not interested in that anyways.
Okay.
So you could put, but I think in an RX-7, you can only go up a certain amount of cylinders. So you're only allowed a six cylinder in an RX-7. Right?
OEM rotary cars are only allowed up to six cylinders if swapped.
Yeah. So then my choice is still the same, and it would be a K24 turbo FTRX-7. And before I even started with any of the chassis build, I would sit back and look at that car for a month and figure out every single spot that we could take weight out of that car while still being street mod legal. And I would want approximately a 2,400 pound or hopefully even lighter FDRX7 K24 turbo. And
you'd probably make 600-ish, which would put in the territory.
I would want to make seven, and I would only want it in the top gears, and then I would want to make it if we were using a six-speed, for example, I'd want 500 in third or, 475 in third, 600 in fourth, 700 in fifth and sixth in kill mode. Because we found in the Integra that 800 is where you start to seemingly struggle a little bit more. And they seem to be actually quite content at about 700 wheel.
Okay, but 700 wheel. Tell me about the build on an engine for 700 wheel. Are we talking about sleeved motors and fully built motors?
You're talking about a sleeve block with a stock crank, with off-the-shelf rods and pistons. We use a ported head, but I think for that 700 number, you can do it without a ported head. Stock cams. And springs and retainers. So you're looking at, sleeve block, rods and pistons, springs and retainers. And
if you're paying retail on a built motor like that, what would that cost?
If you're having an engine builder build it for you, or if you're buying the parts and having the block machine and assembling it yourself?
Well, I guess I don't know anyone that can sleeve their own block. So what does that cost?
No, but I mean, are you ordering a sleeved block, sleeved and bored? and doing the entire engine assembly on yourself.
Sure, because of course, you know, like if you buy an engine directly from 4Piston, they make incredible setups, but they're also they're a premium product.
Yeah, so I think that you'd be for sure under 10K for that 700 wheel horsepower engine if you're building it yourself. And I think potentially, I mean, if you consider the core is $1,000, let's say, and your $1,000 in sleeves or something like that, so $2,000 rods and pistons, another $1,000 or so, valve train not even $1,000, that's $4,000. This one, yeah, you're probably 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Probably eight with headsets, head gaskets, and stuff like that.
Okay.
But when you think of, like, you know, what you'd spend on a Subaru motor or something like that to do that, I'm sure, you know
it's getting there.
It's going to be more. And you're probably going to be considering dry sumps and things like that, whereas with this, you're not.
Right.
So that, I guess you'd probably use that BMW, the KV Auto BMW Trans for it.
Because those are super cheap, right?
I'm not in love with the gearing. Actually, probably, you know what I would do is I think that they make, I don't know if they do it or if someone else do it, but someone makes an adapter to use one of the 6-speed BMW transmissions. So that would be what I would use. I would try to figure out how I could use one of that same generation but the 6-speed. I think it might be a different bell housing adapter. I'm not positive. It might be the same. I forget what's different. But I know that a few people have done that. So I would want to use the 6-speed. It's a bit more for the gearbox, but so be it. And I would look, you know, we've already established that the horsepower would be, the weight would be really low. The horsepower would be really high. The one cool thing about those cars is you don't need to flare them. Those cars fit 285s under stock fenders, no problem at all.
I think that's a big thing. I do want to go back on this a little bit, only because it seems so easy. I think that there is a Corvette probably for every class, but you've heard me talk about it on the show before. We should not ignore the TTRS and what it can do.
I agree.
The newest TTRS is the craziest car that I've ever seen produced ever. There's so much potential there, and it's just so easy.
The problem that you're going to get into that car is the problem that I think that Jackie will encounter with the Supra as he continues going. And I think that he will overcome it because he's an amazing driver and they seem to really know how to get speed out of that car. But when you have to carry around 1,000 pounds more on the same width tire as someone else,
it's going to be difficult. You're right.
No matter how good you are, no matter how good your shocks are, no matter how good any of that is, you know, if you're going to make similar or less power than, let's say that, you know, you were talking about that TTRS, and let's say it was going to make 600 wheel or something like that, because they probably start to get expensive when you go much over that.
Not really.
But now you're... So
I think it's around 700 that they need to do a little bit more work. And in this case, a little bit more is like an off-the-shelf turbo kit that's like $5,000 will like uncork the car to the point where I think it can make almost 700.
But at some point, you're going to start having to do like Apex Motoring up here does a lot of GTR and Audi RS3 and TTRS stuff. And at like, I think around that 700 mark, they're starting to talk about like a Dodson gearbox. And the problem is it's real. Those cars are really inexpensive to make power up until that point. But when you start talking about doing a Dodson gearbox for one of those things,
yeah,
that graph looks like the coronavirus in March.
Yeah.
Like, it's going along kind of not too bad, not too bad, not too bad. And then it's like, oh, that was $20,000 for a gearbox. That's cool.
Not at all. Yeah, that would be crappy.
So, you know, whereas if you look at that, let's say BMW gearbox or whatever, where they, you know, they're pretty good at that power level, and if it breaks, you're not upset because it broke a $20,000 gearbox. You're like, oh, well, I'll get another one for, I think those 6 speeds are like $1,000 versus 250, but even if it's $1,000, you're probably not going to go through the hassle of upgrading a bunch of stuff if they last for a while. You're going to say, well, it's a grand. It lasts 6 months. I'm just going to go buy another one.
So I think in all of this, the recurring theme, we have a similar attitude, is you, if you're starting to think about competing in Time Attack, not just Grid Life, but Time Attack in general, there are two paths you can go down, right? You can first build the car you want to build and have fun with it and try and, yep, you know, go faster than you've ever gone before. The other path is to build the car that will maybe not bring you the most joy, but will be the fastest. And I think the route to fastest consistently is starting with one of the lightest chassis you can find.
Lightest chassis and ease of big, tall tire. Not even just wide tire, but tall tire, right? So that FTRX7, you can fit a 25-inch tall tire fairly easily. That's not the 28 that I'd want to put on the Corvette for Unlimited, but it's wide enough to get you into a 285 3018, you know, with probably just a rolled lip in the back type of thing, right?
Sure.
The correct offset wheel.
If you compare that, like a Lotus Elise by comparison is very light, but as far as I know, you cannot fit a big tire under a Lotus Elise very easily.
I think it's a big struggle, and I think that when you get into a car like that, you probably won't want to just put an eBay flare on it, and if you start looking into a wide fender or something like that, you know, the cost of it starts going up, you know, crazy. Starts getting huge money.
Yep, and you're still on a short, narrow wheelbase, and it's... You need to do a lot, I think.
And I've just always noticed, in my opinion, watching, there's certain chassis that are just loose. They just seem to really tend to oversteer a lot. And that makes them fun, and that can make them fast, but it doesn't always make them predictable.
Sure.
And I had an S1000, and it was a great, fun car. I really enjoyed tracking it, but I really struggled with that predictable nature of it. And I know that you can tune it out, but you have to, you know, be really... you know, working at it to really tune that out and still have max grip without a chassis that's very loose. And I know Andy and those guys, they know those things inside out backwards. But I look at an FTRX7, and I know some people that have tracked them and tracked them with some decent success. And they just look like a naturally, you know, neutral car while still having great, you know, grip characteristics. So I think that would be one of the things that if you're wanting to put down 700 wheel horsepower, that would be, you know, a big thing. You want to be able to me, I'd be willing to give up a couple of miles an hour of minimum speed to have the loosest setup so I could just put that power down and let it eat out of those low speed corners. Because to me, that, you know, at a lot of the tracks we run, that could be more important.
So, okay. Yeah, I think FDRX7, you'd also get some great points for having a good looking car. I don't think there's any. There aren't many cars in the field that look as good as Ben Mitch's car does.
No. And one of the cars when we talk, FDRX7s, is a person that used to run in CSCS. He's a retired guy now, and he's retired from racing. But his name is Jim Kuchke. And he's done a lot of rotary work for other guys and stuff like that locally. And he had a black FDRX7. With black, with polished lip, CCW classics. He always ran a 285 slick on it under stock fenders, and it had a basic wing and splitter, and it was a rotary still because he was a hardcore rotary guy. But that car was always stunning, and you know it was just it only ever had a few little white graphics on a black car, and that thing was just fantastic. And I always, anytime the conversation of an FDRX7 comes up, I picture that car, and I actually had the chance to buy that car for a very good price as a roller, and I didn't, and I should have, because that was one heck of a car, and I think that we could have done great things with it. But you know, going down that road as well would have been an expensive road, and him being such a hardcore rotary guy would have been upset if I would have swapped it or case swapped it. So he might have not wanted to give me as good of a deal if he would have known what I was planning on doing with it.
So, I think I agree with you. FD and an in-street mod would be great to see. What about Street GT, which you know is less mods, but usually big, heavy, you know, GT-type race cars? The price cap, I believe, for this year is $110,000. I'm guessing there's a portion of that might fit there, but I don't know. I don't know that you could outperform, like a GT500 Mustang with a bunch of tire underneath it.
How much does a C8 Z06 cost, do you think?
I don't know. The Z06s from C7, I thought, were around 100.
So if that fits under that cap, then to me, that's game over for everyone.
But, you know, I actually have a hard time believing that the C7 was demonstrably faster than the C6. I see a lot more C6s running around the track than I do C7s.
I agree, and I don't doubt that, because I believe that a C7 got a power bump, but it got a big weight bump too. And again, a C7 was one of those cars, like we were talking about with the S2000. It just seems like such a naturally loose car. Like I've ridden in one, I've seen them drive, and they seem like you're always fighting that chronic oversteer. And I think that if you can tune that out, which I think they've kind of done with the C8, I think it's still, from what I've heard, a bit pushy, but as I'm sure it'll be much better with the Z06, I think that that could be a special car when it finally arrives. I mean, when you look at what a C5, C6, and C7 have been and how fast they have been, and, you know, still kind of based on that front end and rear wheel drive, I think this C8 Z06 is going to be next level.
What do you think that... I think that'll be, we will learn more as that car becomes more available, but what's on the market today that you think would be a great fit?
Is there a limit for tire width? Is it 315 or something like
it's,
that? I think it's
315 or the largest that is on any particular model, I think. So like, you know, if Viper had 355 or something, let's not use Viper because it would not be allowed, but you know what I mean? Like if a really wide tire was available as an option, you're allowed to use that tire.
And is a, I wonder what something like a, such a tough, that one, I honestly have to say that I haven't been as mentally invested in Street GT as I have in this other class. I think it's a great class for grid light, but I've never, when we talked about this today, I just thought about the four classes.
So Street GT is growing. I think we're going to have stronger competition there than we did last year, because last year it was brand new. But a few guys who I know are very fast are committed to building that class up, because there was good competition already at Gingerman.
And how are you policing, or is it against the rules to have a built NA motor in Street GT?
Yes, it is.
But it's a hard thing to police, I guess, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's true. The short answer is I'm not sure how to police that. We would hope that competitors value the... they would be honorable enough to comply with the rules in that way.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what the answer is for that class. Maybe a C6 Z06. I assume a Viper ACR was too expensive.
It's for a maximum of 8 cylinders. So a Viper ACR, of course, would be competitive in track mod, and so that's where it belongs.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Probably a C6 Z06 with the cars that are available right now, I have to think.
Yeah. But remember, no engine work of any kind, which means no cams either. And, of course, that car in particular opens up a lot with cams.
Yeah, but people have made big power on the stock cam and stuff like that. If you're allowed headers and exhaust and flash and stuff like that, you're still going to make over 500 wheel horsepower. And that's such a light car with such a great power band and such good factory aero and all that kind of thing that I think that I would stick. I mean, maybe, are you allowed suspension stuff in that class?
I believe you are, in the same way that you are for street class, which I believe is a single adjustable coilover.
So, you know what? I think that But are V8 superchargers allowed?
No forced induction. I'm looking.
Only forced induction on six.
Let's see.
Because I was going to say C706.
All right, we're recording again. So we had a little glitch on the board, which is sad, but we concluded with C6Z06 for Street GT. Now the final class is Street class, and there's been some doors that have been available for a while, but just recently been opened up. It does seem like there is power potential in some of those turbo cars, Subarus and Evos. Available within the rules. But I still think that an NA Honda that's light can do really well.
If I won the lottery tomorrow, I would probably come to the next Street Lights event where the border was open with the nastiest K27 CRX that the world maybe has ever seen for a limited class, like such a limited class like that. I think that there is so much potential to go blisteringly fast in an NA, maybe K27, maybe not, but either way, like close to 400 wheel horsepower, K24, CRX, like an 88 HF, the lightest model, big flares, 285-3018 in the front, 225-4517 in the back, and, you know, probably somewhere around 1,850 pounds or something like that. I think you could probably do that within the rules. A big, like, StopTech 13-inch kit or something like that for the front. And actually, probably not that. Probably my C43 kit that we ran on the Integra because it's so light and to try to keep the weight down. I think that car would come out and it would just murder.
Probably. Like, but what's the common thread in all of this? Light.
Yep.
Yep. So this is like an advertisement for old cars.
I think that you can do cool things with these newer cars, but I think as those older cars continue their development, I think that those cars are going to get harder and harder to get. And I think as you continue with the development of a newer, heavier car, I think it's going to be harder to find the speed. Whereas with the older car, I think almost that speed is going to be not easier, but still kind of linear.
Sure. Whereas well, I think a challenge within street power. Class is that the ideal car probably varies from track to track, right? Like if you are talking about Road Atlanta as an example, I would say that a bigger, you know, the S209 turbo swapped STI is certainly better than your CRX, probably.
I would disagree because a 380 wheel horsepower sub 2,000 pound CRX is a car that goes 130 miles an hour in a quarter mile.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? Like that is just it's 40 horsepower less than the S209 turbo car, but it's 1,500 pounds lighter or something like that, probably.
That is so much.
And three sizes wider front tire.
Yeah, the big thing for me when I was driving was thinking about my Evo, which was, you know, no slouch on power, but I was comparing its weight, you know, being, I don't know, 3,400 with driver compared to an S2000 with a similar driver. It's hard to beat like 800 pounds of weight. 800 is a lot.
Yeah. And then 1500 is really a lot.
Yep.
Like you're not towing, it's like it would be like the CRX towing the K-Swift. Like
yeah.
That would be like, what would it be like going against some of the Subarus and Evos?
Yeah, you're right.
Imagine that you're out there towing the K-Swift around the track.
That's crazy.
And yes, that motor would be expensive, but a lot of these, you know, Honda engine builders like JBR and four-piston guys like this, they have that recipe pretty figured out. Four Pistons build a lot of motors for midgets, like dirt racing midgets.
Yep.
And they're getting really, really good amount of time out of one of those motors. And they're revving them way up high. They're making a lot of power. And they have the craziest, broadest power bands in those cars. They're ridiculous how broad the power bands are.
I would totally really, really like to do a show with the guys from Four Piston. And they're not even like that far from here. They're on the other side of Indianapolis. But I've just not made a big push to try and talk to them because they're good.
Yeah, these guys, they have this stuff pretty figured out. It probably wouldn't be a podcast that I would be on because they probably don't appreciate that I'm now sponsored by their main competition.
Oh, no.
But
who's their main competition?
Well, probably JBR Engines or Preuntu in the East Coast. But JBR Engines are in Florida. They've been doing it forever. It's a father-son team there. And up until a couple months ago, they had the all motor, front wheel drive, world record, I guess, which was 162 or 163 miles per hour. And that was still in a stock chassis EG Honda Civic.
That's silly.
And that was probably 625 to 640 wheel horsepower, I would guess.
That's so silly.
From what I've seen them post and stuff like that. So, and the rumor is that some cars have made closer to 700 wheel on naturally aspirated.
That makes no sense. So, James, we've been on the phone for like 45 minutes. I think we should do another one of these, but I probably should go hold a baby.
Go hold the baby, Abe. Congratulations. Right. We haven't talked on the phone. Congratulations on the baby. I'm so happy for you guys.
Well, thank you.
It's a lovely time right now. When they start doing more, I feel like there's sometimes a bit less screaming at the start. You got to really enjoy the less screaming.
I'll keep that in mind. So I'm going to play us out here and then hang up. Or I will. I'll play us out and then we can finish.
Sounds
See you
great.
Later, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabe, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes and come and find us in the pits at a grid live to say hello.